Welcome to Season 4 of the Basics of Life Conversations. And in a matter of a few short weeks, the early church goes from being 120 people meeting in an upper room to over 5,000. And we see the disciples, they're the ones, the apostles, they're leading this whole thing. But Jesus is going to introduce here a whole different paradigm in the early church as it was related to leadership, a whole different way that leadership was supposed to look like, what it was to look like in his kingdom. Today on the Basics of Life Conversations, we come to the end of our series of conversations on the hard sayings of Jesus. You know, those statements that sometimes make us stop and scratch our heads and ponder, what did Jesus mean by that? Well, in this final episode, I've chosen to deal with one of the hard sayings of Jesus myself. And the topic that I'm addressing today is the subject of ambition and leadership. You know, it's interesting that in Christian circles, we can often look at the subject of ambition as a negative thing or in a negative way. But in Matthew chapter 20, we see two of the disciples of Jesus seeking ambition, and it's interesting that Jesus doesn't rebuke them. He doesn't even correct them. But what he does is give them a picture of what true leadership is supposed to look like in his kingdom. But what he says here, I think, can be a bit confusing to any of us who are in a position of leadership, because Jesus makes this statement. He says, "Whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave." And in Mark chapter 9, verse 35, Jesus says something very similar. He says, "He sat down and called the 12 and said to them, 'If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all.'" And the question that I want to answer today is this: how do you lead and still be the servant of all? What does true servant leadership look like? Well, let's start by tackling this subject of ambition. Let me set the scene for you. Here in Matthew chapter 20, we read in verse 17. "Now Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them, 'Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and scourge and crucify him. And the third day he will rise again.'" Let's pause there for a minute. So this is some heavy stuff that Jesus is sharing with them, that he's going to go to Jerusalem, he's going to be beaten, he's going to be handed over to the authorities, and they're going to end up crucifying him. So that sets the scene for what happens next. Then we read in verse 20, "Then the mother of Zebedee's son," so this is James and John's mom. Mark's gospel gives us the idea that the boys actually are the ones who put her up to this. Her name is Salome, and she's the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. So this is actually Jesus's aunt. James and John were his cousins. So it says, "Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to him with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from him. And he said to her, 'What do you wish?' And she said to him, 'Grant that these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand and the other on your left hand, in your kingdom.'" Now, I want you to think about this. Jesus has just shared with them that he's going to go up to Jerusalem and be mocked and beaten and crucified. And then here's James and John. They come, you know, asking their mom to come ask him this question of, and it's almost like they didn't hear a thing that he said. You know, they're sending mom to come in and, "Hey, mom, go ask Jesus if we can sit on his right hand and his left hand, be in the most prominent positions in his kingdom." And if I'm Jesus, my reaction would be like, "Hello, did you guys just hear what I said? Did you just hear me talking about, you know, what's going to happen to me and what's coming and what's lying on the horizon? And what, I mean, I would have rebuked these guys." But Jesus doesn't do that. In fact, Jesus stays really, really calm. And we read in verse 22 that Jesus answered and said, "You do not know what you ask." And I want you to notice that he's addressing them, not her. It's like he knows what they're up to. He knows that, you know, they're sending Aunt Salome to come and ask a favor of him. He knows who's behind this request. But here's what's interesting to me. Jesus doesn't rebuke them for this request. He doesn't even correct them for seeking such an ambitious thing. You know, he's not like, "Who do you guys think you are that you would ask such a thing, that you would be placed on my right hand or my left hand?" He doesn't do that at all. And I think what Jesus is modeling, or what he's showing us here, is that having ambition in and of itself is not a bad thing. So let's get back to the story. Jesus answered and said, "You do not know what you ask." And then he asked this question, "Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink and be baptized with the baptism that I'm going to be baptized with?" And they immediately responded, yep, we're able. Yeah, sure, we can do that. It's like they have no clue. They have no idea what's coming. And Jesus said to them, "You will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am going to be baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and my left hand is not mine to give, but it's for those for whom it is prepared by my Father." Now, it is interesting that later, this very Salome would be standing with Mary, the mother of Jesus, at the foot of the cross, watching as Jesus was crucified between two thieves, one on the right and one on the left. And I bet you, in that moment, she was probably thinking, "I'm so glad that Jesus didn't answer my request." Because in that moment, she's maybe realizing, "Oh, that could have been my son's on his right hand and on his left hand." Now, after Jesus responds to the disciples in this way, when he responds to James and John and says, you know, "Are you able to drink the cup that I drink?" It says, then he called all of his disciples to himself, verse 24. And he says, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them." And so he makes this statement. He's kind of saying, "You guys know how the world works." And they're like, yeah, we know this. There are people in charge, and there are people who report to those who are in charge. We know that. That's how the world works. And he says, you know, there are leaders, and then there's also servants. There's people in charge, and there's people under them that you know, do what the leader is asking them to do. And so Jesus says, you know how things work in the world. You know how the Gentiles operate. But then he says this, "Yet it shall not be so among you." You see, these guys are going to be the future leaders of the church. I mean, this whole thing is going to blow up in just a short time from here in the book of Acts in chapter 2, where we see 3,000 people getting saved one day and then 2,000 people getting saved another day. And in a matter of a few short weeks, the early church goes from being 120 people meeting in an upper room to over 5,000. And we see the disciples, they're the ones, the apostles, they're leading this whole thing. But Jesus is going to introduce here a whole different paradigm in the early church as it was related to leadership, a whole different way that leadership was supposed to look like, what it was to look like in his kingdom. So he says in verse 26, "But whoever desires to become great among you," now sometimes we think that's such an evil desire. You know, that guy, he wants to be something. He's wanting to be great. But Jesus doesn't say that. He doesn't chastise them for wanting to be great. But he's going to give them a new definition of what greatness is supposed to look like. So he says, "But whoever desires to become great among you," it's like, okay, that's a valid desire, "let him be your servant." Here's the new description. "And whoever desires to be first among you," again, not a bad desire. Someone has to be the leader. But again, he's going to give a new description. He says, let him be your slave. And then he gives an example. And the example is himself. He says, just as the Son of Man, that's Jesus, that's a title. Son of Man was a title that was used for the Messiah. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. So Jesus is describing a whole different type of leadership that is the opposite of what we're used to. You know, in our society, and it was true in the society in that day, it's what we would call top-down leadership. Top-down leadership was the norm in that culture, and it's the norm in our culture. It's that you know, model where you're the leader, and the leader's the guy that gives the orders. He sets the vision. He calls the shots. And the other people are there to serve and carry out his vision. That's top-down leadership. And that's how it worked in that culture. That's how it works in most places today. There are leaders and there are servants. There are bosses and there are workers. Top-down leadership is prevalent even in a lot of the church world today. You know, some of you may have grown up in a church that during services, there were two chairs up on the stage. One was for the pastor and the other one was for the music director or maybe the assistant pastor. And in olden times, you can still see this in old churches in Europe, there was a big giant chair that would be up on the stage or sometimes even above the stage, a big chair that looked like a throne, and that's where the pastor would sit. And next to it were two small thrones or two smaller chairs where the assistant pastors. And if you've ever seen that, it's just kind of a weird setting, but that was the way it was set up. It was like, we want everybody to know who the leader is, who's in charge. You know, sometimes in churches today, you see reserved parking spots for the pastors or the assistant pastors or their wife or that type of thing. And in churches today, we have pastors who are referred to as CEOs and assistant pastors as executive pastors. And that's how top-down leadership works. You're going to know who's in charge. There's going to be a sign on the door that's very, very clear. This is who the leader is. Or there's going to be a picture up in the lobby that everybody knows. This is who our leader is. Jesus says, no, we are not going to do it like the world. And his model of leadership is going to look radically different. And I want you to note this. However, Jesus is not against leadership. In fact, it's interesting, in Romans chapter 12, when Paul is laying out some of the gifts of the church, in the church, and the gifts of the Spirit, leadership is one of the gifts that he mentions. And the reason is because leadership is necessary. There has to be leaders. So Jesus is not against leadership. He realizes, he knows leadership is essential, but Jesus describes for us a different kind of leadership. And what Jesus describes here can be applied in a home. It can be applied in a church. It can be applied in your business. It can be applied in friendships. So let me break this down. This is what Jesus says. He says, you want to be great? You want to be first? This is what it looks like. Learn to be a servant leader. The word translated servant is diakonos in the Greek, and the word sometimes is used to refer to a table waiter. And I think this is a beautiful picture because you know what the marks are of a good waiter or a good waitress? They're constantly looking to serve the people that they're taking care of. Their eyes are always looking to try and anticipate what the people would need next. I'm an iced tea drinker, and I love it when I go to a restaurant that has really good iced tea, and the waiter or waitress is always coming over and looking. You know, they see my glasses half full, and they come up, you want me to top that off for you? Would you like some more? And they're paying attention. You know, they notice, you know, if you're looking for the salt or you're wanting ketchup, and they're just mindful of that. To have a heart of a servant is to always look for ways to serve the people without them even having to ask for help. So what does servant leadership look like in a family? What does it look like in a church? What does it look like in a business? What does it look like in a friendship? I want to give you three practical pictures of what servant leadership is to look like. And the first is, I want to start with Jesus. What did he do? We see in this passage that Jesus actually uses himself as an example. He said, I didn't come to serve, but to be served. So this is number one, you model servitude. And Jesus actually did this his whole life. He was always seeking to serve those who were around him. But one of the most vivid examples happens in John chapter 13, and it happens to be on the night before he's going to go to the cross. And I think that's interesting, because if there was ever a time where Jesus could have requested that he would be the one being served, in fact, he could have demanded that he would be the one being served, it would be the night before he was going to the cross, but he didn't do that. What does Jesus do on that night? He grabs a bowl and some water, and he takes the form of the lowest servant in the house as he begins to wash all of the disciples' feet. That job was reserved for the servant who was the lowest guy on the totem pole. And you think about the disciples walking around in their sandals on those dirty, dusty roads. I mean, their feet were sweaty and grimy. And Jesus bends down and he begins to wash their feet. So a servant leader, catch this, somebody who is a servant leader should be willing to do the lowest job in the country, in the company. He should be the one who is willing to get his hands dirty. He should be willing to do the hard stuff, to get in the dirt with people. So a servant leader models servitude. He leads by example in that way. And again, this is the example for in a ministry, a business, a family, or even a friendship. So that's the first thing we see that Jesus does, is he models what it looks like to be a servant. But there's something else here, because I think oftentimes those of us who are in positions of leadership, when we read things like this, we think, okay, wait a minute, does this mean that, you know, I should do the job of the janitor? Like I should leave my desk and go and just start emptying trash cans and vacuuming floors and that type of thing. If I did that, it seems like I would actually be doing a disservice to my church or a disservice to my company if I were doing that type of thing. I mean, I'm been placed in this role to do something else. So what does that look like? And again, I think that we should always be willing, that's the key phrase, to do the lowest thing. But you're right. We have responsibilities and we have jobs that we're to do. We have things that people are counting on us to do as a part of our role in the position that we've been placed in. So what does this look like? Here's the second thing that I want you to catch. And again, we see this model in Jesus, but servant leadership, I think, is this. It's learning to leverage your position for the benefit of others. Again, Jesus said this, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Here's how Jesus did this. Jesus took everything that he had and everything that he was God in human flesh, that he was the perfect human being, he took all of that and he leveraged it for the sake of others. You see, the Bible paints this picture of mankind, of every single one of us, of being in bondage to sin and in bondage to Satan. The Bible says that we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We miss God's mark of perfection. And sin left us in bondage. And, you know, we're not sinners because we sin, but we sin because we're sinners. It's ingrained in us. Pride and addictions and anger and jealousies. That's who we are as fallen, broken human beings. But the Bible tells us in Philippians chapter 2, that we're to have, let this mind be in you that was also in Christ Jesus, who humbled himself. And it paints the picture of how Jesus stepped off his throne there in heaven, and he stepped down into humanity. He leaves heaven, and he comes to this earth. He leaves that place where he was worshiped and honored, and he lowers himself and agrees to come to earth as a baby, as a man, to teach us about the love of God and the heart of God. And he lives the perfect life, not to throw that in our face, not to say, see, I showed you that it can be done. No, but the whole thing was a rescue mission. The whole thing is about him coming to pay a ransom for our sins. And so he allows himself to be arrested and beaten and crucified so that he can pay the price for us. And Jesus gives himself as a ransom for many. So Jesus, catch this, he leveraged all that he was and all that he had for the benefit of others. He did what no other human being could do so that fallen human beings could really become who God wanted them to be, that they could be forgiven and put back into right relationship with God. And that's what a servant leader does. You learn to leverage your position, your assets, your resources, your power for the benefit of others. You leverage your time, your resources, your talents, and your possession to help those who are working with you accomplish their goals. Servant leaders empower others to become everything that God has intended them to be. Servant leaders help others accomplish their dreams. So here's my point. Being a servant leader is more than just being willing to do the worst job. Sure, you're willing to mop the floor. You're willing to pick up the mess. But is that the best use of your talent and your position, if that's what you're doing all day long? No, you have talent, you have ability, you have influence, you have means that could be better served in many other ways. So being a servant leader is using all of that to enhance those who are around you, to come under others and seek to lift them up. And I think one of the ways that we learn to do that, and this is the third point, is learning to ask a simple question. How can I help? How can I help? How can I help you? What's on your heart? What's on your mind? What are you seeking to accomplish here? How can I help you? Some of the ways that you might be able to help is through counsel. Some of the ways that you might be able to help is through adding resources or adding others to come in and be a part of, you know, that project. It's using your influence. Sometimes it's just being able to make a call that helps open up a door. So being that servant leader is coming to that place of realizing that the people around you are not really there to help you accomplish your vision and your goals, but you've been put in a place to help others learn how to accomplish their vision and their goals by coming under them and using what you have been given in order to help them. And there is so much joy in doing that, in watching people that you're working with suddenly becoming who God wanted them to be, watching people that you're working with see their dream fulfilled and knowing that you had a small part because you were able to add something to the table. So if you are a leader, I want to encourage you to practice the model of Jesus and see how you can use your status, your resources, your power, what you've been given to come under others and help them become who God wants them to be. And you'll find great joy in doing that. So that's all for this segment of our The Hard Sayings of Jesus series. This is going to end season 4, and we have a couple bonus episodes coming your way, and then we're going to be jumping into season 5, and I'm going to be doing a conversation with several different pastors on the subject of revival. What does revival look like? What are the characteristics of it? What can we learn about revival from history? And is there anything that we can be doing as the people of God in order to help see revival take place here in the United States and maybe even in the world before Jesus comes back for his church? So God bless you. Have a great rest of your week. And we'll catch you next time here on the Basics of Life Conversations.
Thank you for listening to Season 4 of the Basics of Life Conversations with Rob Salvato. This season has been on the hard sayings of Jesus, and we have a lot more content coming your way. If you'd like more Christ-centered content, you can go to goodlion.io at the Good Lion Podcast Network. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd love to have you share it with a friend, give us a rating, or leave us a review. Stay tuned for more from the Basics of Life Conversations.